word that I used my first impression of Micah Shrewsbury is calm. Nate Bauer from Blue White Illustrated joins us. I want to get his first impressions of Micah Shrewsbury from his introductory press conference. What's going on with you today, buddy? How you doing?
You know what? I'm sitting on my front porch, which is like all I live for. It's nice outside. I live for this. I hate the winter. Here we go.
I love it. I'm right with you. I know you'd rather be playing golf. I'll be out on a baseball field in 2 hours. That's what I would rather be. But yes, absolutely. It's gorgeous. Again, the word I used, Nate, was calm, and it's just such a stark contrast from Patrick Chambers. Hey, this is Pat Chambers. Everybody is fired up for Penn State basketball. Woo! That was Pat Chambers. James Franklin, we're going to dominate the state. We're going to come in. We're going to take control. Micah Shrewsbury, very calm. Spoke for 45 minutes, real calm guy. I'm not saying one way works any better than another. I'm very loud. You're generally pretty calm, and there's lots of ways to succeed in between. But it's different. After getting used to Pat for a long time, Micah is just a more laid back, let's just have a rational conversation kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, my word would be folksy. He just seems very salt of the earth, down to earth. Folksy. He seems like a regular guy. Obviously passionate about what he does and what he believes his mission is as a coach, but in a very, kind of reserved and, like I said, down to earth way. Very, very accessible and approachable.
I like that word, and that's great. It's a great word. And since we're on, picking one word, salesman has always been associated with James Franklin, for better or worse. People used it against him early on with the used car variety, but I think we've gotten to see James Franklin is a pretty damn good salesman. He's a good recruiter. Patrick Chambers, salesman. I didn't get the sense that Micah Shrewsbury is a salesman in that regard. Now, look, he's going to have to recruit. There's no question he's going to have to sell Penn State. But again, he didn't come across in that way. So for him to succeed, he's going to have to sell conversations, different things than just a full bore 110% fiery, passionate kind of demeanor.
Yeah, it is always the chicken or the egg, specific to Penn State basketball. Can you have success before you excite people, or do you need to excite people in order to get the people on board that need to be on board to have that success, right? Like, can one happen without the other, and which one has to happen first? And so, I very clearly, this is going to be a lesson in opposites. I think that Micah Shrewsbury is certainly, he's inheriting a situation that obviously we'll see what happens with the remaining, portal entries, for last year's team. It they're not out of the woods. Isaiah Brockington coming back is a big deal, no doubt about it. But Myron Jones, pretty plainly announcing his intention that he'll be playing somewhere else next year. That's an equally big deal. John Hara, Jamari Wheeler, Seth Lundy, like you name it. There's a big, big, big question mark that is kind of hanging over the program and where it's going to go from here. And so depending on those decisions, if more tend to come back than leave, well, now you've got a situation where you might be able to have that X's and O's on court success as soon as you walk in the door. But if they leave, now it's a harder ask, and now it's a harder proposition to be able to ask Micah Shrewsbury, who it doesn't seem to be in his personality to be a huge salesman and get people to believe the unbelievable, right? Like that's a big part of this. That's a big part of what Penn State basketball has been in the past, is trying to get people to buy into the vision, not of what it is currently, but what it could be in the future. And so that's why this next month is so important for them.
Dare I say, what's fascinating to me, though, Nate, with the background, no, he's never been a head coach. But I think Micah Shrewsbury sell can has the potential to sell what he's done and where he's been better than any Penn State coach we've seen. Ed DeChellis came from East Tennessee State. Pat came from BU. And, yeah, he'd gone to a tournament. That's great. Ed had had success. That's great. Jerry was an assistant. Even though Shrewsbury has not been a head coach, I coached with the Boston Celtics. You ever heard of them?
Yep.
I coached with Purdue. They're in the tournament all the time. It just kind of goes hand in hand. I don't think they need the salesman, highly charismatic, passionate, fiery guy to sell them on some kind of – I think Micah might be able to just sit down and talk basketball with them and have them buy into him and where he's been.
No doubt. But here's the deal. We're going to find out. We're going to find out, right? Like, that's it. I'm sitting here with a very clean slate approach. Like, all of us are, right? I mean, it's our job and our duty to have an open perception and perspective on who and what he is and where he'll take the program. But I think that it's only fair to include the notion that the players that he's inheriting have that same opportunity, and mm-hmm. they're going to have to make those same decisions. And we are very quickly going to find out the state of the situation, because right now the reality is that we don't actually know it, because you cannot look at this roster minus at least five of those players that entered the portal and say that you have any idea what's left behind.
No question.
You don't know who any of those other players are.
But here's the thing.
No idea.
This is where things get interesting, and you and I have had these conversations before. You're losing good players. There's no question. Getting Brockington back, I think, is helpful. The last I heard, there's 800 freaking players in the transfer portal. Can I make the case that he can go get better players than the ones leaving, Nate? I mean, immediately, can he get better players? Now, look, Myron Jones scored 15 a game in the Big Ten. That's good, but Myron Jones has some limitations in his game in terms of finishing. Can he get better players than John Herra and Jamari Wheeler and Trent Buttrick? I think it's a reasonable expectation that he can get players just as good, if not better. Now you've got to mix and match personalities and egos and agendas, and why is this guy transferring? Is he going to come in and be all about me and not about the team? There's a lot of issues when you got transfers, but in terms of basketball, I think he can go get better basketball players than the guys leaving.
The devil you know versus the devil you don't.
Yeah, sure.
For me, the devil that I know is that what a horrible way to characterize this, because literally all of those guys that have their names currently in the portal are great kids. They're just high character, good guys. Jim Ferry is not wrong in his assessment of who and what John Herra is and what he represents. Trust me, they are going all out to try to keep John in the program. That is a huge cornerstone from which you can rally other guys around and build from, even if it's just for 1 year, right? Like, that is a program setting, attitude setting, character setting type of individual that you want to have on your team. Like I said, it is a very, very unknown road ahead. Doesn't mean that it's not a bright road. It probably is. It could be. But there's just a lot to navigate in these next few weeks, and then in turn, you know, next season.
Nate Bauer from Blue White Illustrated joining us. Great insight there with the Herra stuff. That would be big in terms of setting a tone. Micah Shrewsbury was asked by Dave Jones today an interesting question. Micah chose to stay at Purdue for the NCAA tournament, which I believe was perfectly the right decision for him to do. But I do think that maybe he could have gotten on a plane real quick and come to Penn State for one day real quick just to talk with everybody, Whether that would have been logistically possible, I don't know. He did have to get back. There's COVID testing and all of these types of things, and they're trying to prepare for a tournament. But it was an interesting situation. He gets hired on a Monday morning, and 24 hours later, six players are in the transfer portal. Would it have made a difference if he could have stopped by real briefly and met with everybody face-to-face for 2 or 3 hours? Would that have made a difference? Would it have made a difference if he would have just walked away from Purdue and their NCAA tournament and just come to State College and taken over the Penn State job right away?
No. And like, that's the, to me, I think that's a key ingredient here is those guys had their minds made up a long time ago. Not necessarily minds made up to leave Penn State, but to enter the transfer portal. I can say unequivocally that that was very, very long thought out and planned. It's not like the way that it looks or looked is worse toward Micah Shrewsbury. It's almost unfair. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, well, he introduces himself. He's named the coach, and then they've decided that they're going to leave. Well, no, they had the opportunity. They had the time to spend to think and go over and decide, you know, weigh what all their options are. And it became very apparent that no matter who was named the head coach, absent Jim Ferry, you know, that those guys were largely going to enter the portal and see what their options were. That said, even if Jim Ferry had been named the head coach, there was probably a good possibility that a bunch of those guys, maybe not all six, but a bunch of them would have ended up in the portal anyway. And so what's important here, and, you know, Mark Brennan asked the first question about whether or not there's an invitation to return. Well, you know, that's what the portal is supposed to be. The portal is supposed to be an opportunity to weigh what your options are, not necessarily a hard exit from the program. And so I do think that there's a lot that remains to be done, you know, for who is left, right? And currently we know of two decisions. That leaves four more, you know, that kind of have to feel their way out and see what's out there and decide what, you know, what the best option for them is moving forward in their careers.
All right. In introducing Micah Shrewsbury, Sandy Barber, the AD, said, "We want sustained success. We want to compete year in and year out in the Big Ten." I hope that that's the case. I have my doubts that Penn State truly does want to compete year in and year out in terms of providing all of the resources that it would take to do that.
Yep.
The notion is that it's lip service that they say they want sustained success. We've talked about it at length. Can Penn State have sustained success regardless of who the coach is, and what would it take to do so?
How much time do we have?
Yeah, we got about 4 hours. Go ahead.
It's it. I'm glad that you brought it up because like that's everything. It's Micah Shrewsbury by every account is a solid individual, solid coach. You know, obviously his first crack at this level as a head coach, but the guy can coach basketball, and the guy is a character person that we know this. Okay. What we don't know is where is Penn State's commitment to the program. And Sandy Barber, you know, made pretty plain her intention today, right? Like that, there was no confusion about what she was saying in terms of, she said that they, you know, of the hundreds of conversations that they had, everyone said that there was nothing inhibiting them from having the type of success that they desired for the men's basketball program.
What's the shortfall, well, revenue shortfall from COVID? That would be something to me. The money that they have never spent, period. That would be something to me. That to me sounds like the lip service that we've been hearing for five decades with Penn State basketball. I can come up with a bunch of potential deterrents that would prevent them from having sustained success.
It is very, very much a question of, is it who they want to invest in, or is it whether or not they can invest, period, given the finite amount of resources? When I ask my question about pros and cons, you know, listen, I'm going to leave it open-ended, right? He can choose how to answer that the way that he wants. But I did find it very striking and interesting that for Micah Shrewsbury, it's the success in all of Penn State's other sports that drew him to this as a, well, if they're having success, why can't we? What is preventing us at Penn State men's basketball from reaching those same levels of success?
What did you think of that answer?
I think that it is currently going to be the test of what I believe versus what he believes.
Right. I thought it was very naive. I thought that it sounded naive of not understanding. And Dave Jones wrote about this 2 weeks ago in a brilliant piece for Penn Live. He's coming from a place where basketball has mattered. It does not matter here. So women's volleyball matters. It doesn't cost any money. Women's soccer matters. It doesn't cost him any money to matter to the point where he's talking about it would cost a lot of money.
Now what I would say, and I'm writing this right now. What I would say is that Purdue, their annual expenses are actually toward the bottom of the Big Ten annually. So he's coming from a place that did more with less, right? Matt Painter's not a huge expense. He's not obviously he's a big time coach, but he's not commanding the top 10 salaries in the country, for that program. And so they have been able to do it at Purdue with less.
But they're in Indiana.
They are in Indiana. Exactly. Penn State and James Franklin, like, this all kind of relates.
Yeah,
like,
sure. All these, I know where you're going.
All these tentacles that relate. And so Penn State is not a place that you can get to on your way to somewhere else. It's not, you have to purposefully be coming to State College, right? If you're going from Philly to Pittsburgh, yeah, you can stop it in State College, but it's pretty far out of the way from the turnpike. And so when you're looking at the major corridors of recruiting and that element, which is so important to the success of the program, there are more expenses involved in that. There are more resources that are demanded to be able to do those things and to do them efficiently. And so it all ties together. It all ties up. And to me, what I see at Penn State is a finite amount of resources, right, of which football is going to command its piece. It has to. That's how you continue to bring those resources in. And then there's 30 other sports, and they are all clawing and scrounging for the rest of the pie. And women's volleyball is very successful. You want to put whatever it takes on within the context of that landscape, okay? For women's volleyball, you want to have that success and you want to keep that going. Wrestling, what does it cost to have the most successful wrestling program in the country? That's what you do, because comparatively speaking, it's not that much. But those things, when it's 30 sports, they all add up. And so, that is the big question, is there enough in terms of available resources to create the type of men's basketball program that is capable and has the opportunity to have sustained success? What she said today, that vision for the program has never, ever, 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 ever happened at Penn State, and it's never been backed up by the program's resources. So, again, is it about who they're investing in that they don't want to invest in? And this isn't just Sandy Barber. This is Tim Curley. This is before him. Do they not want to invest in, Jerry Dunn? Do they not want to invest in Ed DeCellis? Do they not want to invest in Pat Chambers? Or do they not have the ability, based on the financial constraints that exist, to invest in Penn State men's basketball, period? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I have some guesses.
Can I just ask you the really the most obvious question of all, of why Penn State's athletic budget is set up the way it is. We have these conversations over and over and over and over, and it all boils down to athletics being a self-sustaining entity that doesn't take from the general education, from general institution. Other schools do. Why doesn't Penn State just change and allow that to happen? If you're dead set again on having 31 sports, and you're not going to spend the kind of money, then just change the damn rules a little bit and allow for a little bit of money going to athletics from the general school.
Well, Jay Paterno says that the football program is in service of the university, not the other way around. And so that's a pretty prominent Board of Trustees component who holds that view. Now, granted, obviously the board voted overwhelmingly most recently to follow through on the funding that had already been approved for, its latest football project. But those are the attitudes that you're competing with. And I'm not even taking a side on that, right? I mean, this is higher education. There are rabbit holes that we could go down all day.
Sure, but other schools do it. Why does Penn State have to feel like it's got to stand on them? I don't know how many other schools are like Penn State where everything is self-funded, but why do you got to die on that mountaintop at the expense of your men's basketball program?
And that's a great question. The other great question that is, it's two things. It is, yes, they're doing it all self-sustaining, but they're also carrying more sports than practically anybody in college athletics. Truly. I mean, I don't know exactly where they are in that pecking order, but Stanford having just got rid of some programs, that makes a difference. And Stanford's, again, not self-sustaining. So it's tough enough to do one. It's tough enough to be self-sustaining with 16 sports programs that don't rely on university funding. That challenge is that much harder when you're trying to do it for 31. And so it is the crux of the conversation. It is everything that Penn State has to figure out in terms of its identity, what it wants to be, and where it wants to go. And under the direction of Sandy Barber currently, we know what that is. We know what that direction, that vision that she has for Penn State athletics is. And I should tell you, it has been wildly successful in terms of the hires that she has made for those non-revenue sports. She has invested in non-revenue sports, and they have all almost uniformly been very, very successful. It's just a question of where does that fit into the picture of what happens to the money-making sports? Right, like where do they go, within that framework? And so we'll see.
You asked earlier how long we had, and that's why these answers. People that just want to look at the surface. Why can't Penn State basketball be very good? Well, you got 4 hours. You want to dive into each and every one of these topics?
Yep.
Most people don't see. Most people are like, well, I hear what you're saying, but I don't care because I just want to keep asking my question of why Penn State. But it is so complex and multi-layered that I'm sure you follow Penn State basketball as closely as anybody. I'm sure you kind of chuckle every time the question comes up. Why can't Penn State basketball be good? Well, again, you got 4 hours to talk about it?
Yep. It is complex, but I have a very, very, very short answer for why Penn State didn't hire John Beilein. Right? They don't have the money.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep. Hey, great discussion, buddy. Always enjoy these, man. Good analysis, first impressions on Micah Shrewsbury. We'll hope to do it again soon. Thanks, pal.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, as good as it gets there.